your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Rest make dab in the middle. We are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The Secret Truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, along with my co-host,
Charlotte Littlefield. Hello, George.
Okay, Charlotte, you're sounding great. You're recovering, right? Up in snow country, right?
Yes. Having a great holiday season. I hope you are, too.
Oh, good. We've got quite a few different subjects and topics we're going to cover tonight. But the first one I want to start out with is George Washington University. They dropped the American history requirement for history majors. My gosh, and it said in the article that one-third of the colleges and universities in this country don't require an American history requirement anymore. Now, what's going on with that, Charlotte? That's crazy, isn't it?
Oh, my gosh. That is such a valuable I'll tell you, it's tragic. It's so valuable to know our history.
Right.
It's very important that we understand who we are, what we're doing, where we came from, and so that we can understand the circumstances in which we find ourselves. And to find out that they've, a third of college graduates are in history degrees, no less, aren't required to take American history is very interesting.
They're saying in the article that appeared in what was that their emphasis is towards global students. They didn't want to require that because it might put off some students that or have a global focus. See what I mean? So what do they want? They want a bunch of global citizens and global students and to heck with American history, right?
Well, I think the important thing to remember when looking at history, I know it's not entirely, but rather than worrying about these courses, we need to make sure we're preserving the source documents that, our history.
Right. Well, we have the National Archives, see, in Washington, D.C. But, there have been instances where people have gone in there and taken original documents out.
Right, that must stop. If you know what I'm saying, these are our treasures.
Yeah, I know. So they can even get by some of the safeguards that exist if you're sneaky enough, I guess, or put them down your trousers or something. And I think one of the guys that used to work for Bill Clinton did that. He got caught. He got fined and everything on that. Yeah, Sandy Berger, I believe. Yeah, he got caught doing that and admitted it. I mean, confessed to it. So, but anyway, what they don't teach that I've been talking to students lately, and they don't know a thing about the natural law. Okay, and I mean they don't teach that connection to the founding fathers, and they were well versed in that. And from the natural law came the natural rights, the right to defend oneself, which is Second Amendment type rights. So. I mean,
which is quite distinct from human rights.
Right, exactly. And that's a good point, Charlotte, is that what they've done is they've taken humanitarianism and converted it into something called humanism that's man-centered. See what I mean? And so the natural rights come from not from man but exist or come from God if you're on the religious side of this. Of these issues, but they're not made up by other men, see. But human rights can be just penciled in and put into law and all this by men. So that's the difference that they're not teaching. Moving on to the second topic here that we lined out is that there's a book written in the last year by Dr. Frances Jensen. She's appeared on NPR. We haven't been able to arrange an interview with her, but we've covered her book. It's called The Teenage Brain, okay? And it sets out in there some very, very interesting topics about what's going on in the teenage brain. In fact, she's a lady that had raised two teenage sons, okay? So she's got really actual experience in this area besides being a neuroscientist, see? But she, her book deals with why teens are impulsive and addiction prone and how they should protect their brains. Okay. But she goes into her book and so forth. She talks about the myelin sheath. I think that's something like, acts like an insulator, doesn't it, Charlotte?
Well, yeah, the way I understand it. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And, but it also, there's axons that are surrounded by this myelin sheath is made up of a large part of cholesterol, see? And what it does is it enables these neuron impulses, to travel down that, much faster than they normally would. But also then there's a better communication, I understand, with the frontal lobe. And she's saying the better access and communication you have with the frontal lobe, then your decision making will be better and your risk taking will be very, very minimal, see? And just overall your decision making will improve as this develops. But I think she's saying that also it takes between 12 years of age and late 20s for the myelin sheath to fully develop in the brain. So it's sort of like a hardwiring type of mechanism in a way. And if it does not develop properly because of problems in family or teenage problems and
nutrition,
and,
maybe.
What's that? Yes, yes.
Nutrition,
now that's an important part because. Teenagers are more, what do they eat junk a lot, you know? And as a result, they're not that, good on their diet and so forth. So, that's a big part of it right there, probably. It's nutrition. I think families also, she found that in her studies that families teenagers that came from a very well stable families, seem to do better. On the this development stages of that, because the psychological part and emotional part does affect that teenage brain, see. And so she goes on and expands on that in her NPR. You can go to NPR, Frances Jensen, and you can play that back through the NPR. We'd like to get her on the air sometime, but we haven't been able to do it yet. But we really like what she has to say. And also, NPR, in conjunction with, actually, it was PBS. There was a PBS special called The Teenage Brain a number of years ago. So that's also very insightful. But, my gosh, what are we doing? We got kids running around with, you know, undeveloped brains or problems with their myelin, you know, sheaths and stuff. And out there, you know what this caused me to think about was, you notice the reaction that we had because of the Trump election of the young people, Charlotte?
The protests? Is that what
you said? Well, what I'm saying is that the young people that were in support of Hillary reacted very, very emotional, okay?
Yeah, they sure did, didn't they?
And so what I'm thinking is that perhaps some of what this teenage brain book is in there about the myelin sheath not being fully developed, they could be susceptible to the same thing, see? So,
yeah, sure, it's possible.
Because that way it would explain some of the problems that people are having trying to, process the Trump victory here, you know. But talking about Trump now, though, he's really getting close to Netanyahu, is he not?
Yeah, I don't like to see that. I do believe it may be happening, yes.
And as a result, we're going to see a White House that is closely aligned and very close to the Israelis and especially Netanyahu. And some people are just saying, hey, we got to be careful about this, see? And because Benjamin Netanyahu is far to the right in Israel. He's been pushing the settlements here recently. And just recently, the UN voted, though, against the Israelis on the settlement question, and actually in favor of the Palestinians. And they actually condemned the policies that the Israelis have been carrying out on the settlement question. And so that was just a recent vote, and that was taken at the UN. And Obama came in for a scathing condemnation by Netanyahu and the Israeli faction and AIPAC and so forth about, you know, but the question is, the settlement question is obvious. Even here's a point to make. In the Security Council vote, it was 14 to our abstention. So in those 14 votes was France and England and Britain. So even the British and even the French voted against Israel on that question of the settlements, see. And they're saying basically that Israel has been way outside of the law in fomenting and building those settlements in the West Bank. So that was a real big no given by the UN to the settlement question. And is, of course, the Israelis are raising in all kinds of hell about that. But also, there's an article that appeared a few years ago about ecstasy drug trade coming out, being promoted out of Israel. So sometimes the Israelis have their hands in a lot of unsavory types of activity, see. So you have to look at Israel as the top leadership there is in bed with our top leadership usually, and they're conniving and up to all kinds of problems in problem areas and illegalities and stuff and so forth. But any comments, Charlotte?
Oh yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, no, I have nothing in, you know, I worry about the Zionist elements that are obviously going to be a part of the Trump administration.
I know, and what I don't like about what Trump has done, he's loaded it up with the Goldman Sachs people, see? And the Goldman Sachs is the one that paid Hillary over $600,000 in speeches to her. So they were playing both sides of the deal. And when you, at these Bilderberg meetings, sometimes six people from Goldman Sachs show up there as members, a meeting there, attendees of the meeting. And that's quite a presence of six people out of 140. That's quite a percentage. So Goldman Sachs is very powerful. They're showing up as appointees, possible appointments by the Trump administration. Some of the people I just won't say any more than that. It's just too many Goldman Sachs people. And they come right out of the New York Fed, too. A lot of these Goldman Sachs people do. They've dominated the New York Fed over the years, Goldman Sachs has. So we've got the Fed privately owned, being dominated by Goldman Sachs, and then moving directly into the Trump administration, which is not a good sign. I think Trump is his own man, but he's going to have all these advisors around him that have obligations to and connections to Goldman Sachs, and that's not good at all. Oh, in addition, what we were talking about a little earlier about the teenage brain, there's a lady that wrote one of the chapters in The State of the American Mind, and her name is Jean Twenge, and the title of that particular chapter was The Rise of the Self and the Decline of Intellectual and Civic Interest. Okay, and basically what she was saying in that article, we have that article up on our site for download, so you can read the complete article. And then go ahead and order that book too, The State of the American Mind. We interviewed the two authors of that book. Actually, it was a compilation of about 8 or 10 different authors' white papers. But it's excellent. And it got into all of this, the political correctness and all this feelings-based stuff that's going on in the colleges. Now that, Charlotte, now that's the point right there, too, that we shouldn't let slip by. and that's that this microaggressions and all of these triggering devices or triggering statements and all this political correctness that's taken over many of our young college graduates, then are they not suffering with a myelin sheath deficiency maybe, or an emotional distraughtness brought about by family breakups and drugs and computer games and everything else? What do you think?
Well, you know, if anything's possible, you know, I'm not qualified to say it one way or the other.
Well, what I always look at, I look at a synergistic confluencing of multiple things together. See, and what I see going on is that sometimes one negative thing combined with two or three other negative things can really overwhelm the individual. See, and that's basically what I'm seeing happening in with our young people. They're out here playing computer games. They go to movies that are very violent. They're in broken homes. Perhaps they have a myelin sheath type problem or whatever. But I believe I see our young people as being very, very emotionally distraught, and they're not very happy. And then they're self-possessed or something, so to speak. They're, you know, obsessed with themselves more, than they used to be, and not more civic minded than, but, and also that way you can reach them on an emotional basis. So whoever is controlling some of their actions can hit them with a highly emotionally charged, you know what I mean, argument. And the result of that can be very detrimental.
Trigger?
Yes, yes. I think these kids are set up to be triggered off, say. So someone comes along that knows how to manipulate psychological, we're talking about mind washing, brain control and stuff here, but on a high basis, a high level basis, then they can trigger these people by saying the right things, like, well, Trump is not my president, or other things, see, such as that. And then they set the people up during the election and demonized him to be the worst possible person in the whole world, and we know that that's not true. And they forgot about Hillary and her problems in the past. So they just focused in, the press did. And they did a hell of a job in indoctrinating the American public, the Democratic supporters of Hillary, against Trump. And I believe that's what we're seeing now as a backlash, is that they're coming out with this and really attacking him. The attack is just continuing, Charlotte, from what I could see.
Well, there's no reason to get it out of their system. Why restrain yourself? The man's not even office yet, and they're acting as if, you know, the sky is falling.
Yeah, well, you know, one interesting thing that occurred recently, and you brought it up earlier before the program started, and this recent, you know, it looks like Obama is trying to just sabotage everything that the government, as much as he can before Trump goes in. And this recent, you know, deporting, you could say, of these Russians, okay? The 35 Russian from New York and the Maryland area was a sort of punishment, to the Russian for a perceived, interference in our election with some kind of a cyber attack or something that no one has fully given us the evidence on yet.
Right. And going on at the same time, you've got former President Jimmy Carter appealing to Obama through, I understand, the New York Times, to recognize the Palestinian state, or to take some action to ensure a state solution before Trump can get in, tying Netanyahu down and ensuring that the illegal advancement of Israeli settlements does not continue.
Right. So,
and the apartheid state be addressed, you know.
Yeah, Jimmy Carter came in on a scathing. They attacked him when he came up with some of that in his book, didn't he?
Yes, he has his critics, but I happen to agree with them, with Jimmy Carter.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but here's what I see in the Middle East. I see on both sides, the Palestinian and the Israeli side, there are extreme elements, okay? And those extreme fanatical elements on both sides of the Palestinian and Israeli question have lobbied against peace. And they've done everything they can to continue the warfare and the division, but not a resolution of the division of the two and the differences between Israel and Palestine or Gaza and West Bank areas, you know. So I don't see that it's ever going to be accomplished that I can tell right off hand. What do you think?
Let's not forget that Israel is a Jewish democracy, whatever that is.
Right.
And their rabbis, the people that spiritually lead the country, don't necessarily agree with the boundaries that were set up in 1947. And they have a vision for a greater Israel project. You know,
the land
was actually theirs historically, blah, blah, blah. And those are the forces that, you know, we're working against. It's time for Israel to either become a republic, get a constitution, do something. But you understand what I'm saying? But to say that you're going to leave up the future of your military, your civilian growth, to a religious... Excuse me, George. I have to take a break.
Right. We're all a little sick here, Anyway, something's got to change here. And we've got to look at this in a more reasonable, a calm way. And I just don't think that the extreme elements there in the two areas there are going to allow the moderate forces on the Palestinian and the Israeli side to ever effect a final agreement, peace agreement. And I think the motivation from the radical right, you could say, with the Netanyahu right, is they want the land and they want the Palestinians gone. And I think Miko Peled, we interviewed him several years ago, and his dad was one of the top generals in the establishment of the Israeli state. And he always thought that after the Six-Day War and so forth, he started meeting with some of the top Israeli leaders, and he says that they were motivated to drive the Palestinians away or out of Israel totally, West Bank and Gaza and everything, and for land. And that's what Miko Peled told us on the air that his father had related to him. So the top leadership, according to Miko Peled's father, General Peled, was that the top Israeli leadership was set on driving the Palestinians away or out of Israel proper, the whole area, and then to take their land. And that's basically what's been going on over a number of years.
And it's also a Rothschild. Yeah, sorry about that. And it's also, isn't it a Rothschild invention? Israel itself.
What happened
was...
But
then it's a banking thing, but... You know, Rothschild may not be Jews. They're not practicing Jews, you know.
Well, what happened that I can see is that in the 1880s, there was a major meeting in Switzerland, the Israelite Alliance. And so a large number of Zionist Jews got together and started planning on going back to the Middle East in Israel and reestablishing that. And so eventually they got Balfour there in England in support. And I believe they recruited in the late 1800s, early 1900s, the Rothschild family into Zionism in return to Israel or reestablishment of the state of Israel. And so I think once they got the Rothschilds on board, then the money was there available to them. Of course, what interceded in the meantime were two world wars. But even during, before the World War II, they were transferring Jews out of Germany to Israel. There was a transfer agreement that was struck with the pre-Nazi government. And when the Nazi government took over, Hitler took over, he stopped that immediately. But previous to the Hitler government, to the Nazi regime and government, there were mechanisms, and it was called the transfer agreement between Israelis and the Germans in transferring them from Germany to Israel. So that's a little written about that much, you know, but it does exist, and it was reality at that time. But now we have Israel receives about $4 billion a year from us, approximately. And so they're our chief foreign aid recipient from the United States.
And they're less than 10 million people.
So, I mean, that's a tremendous amount of money. And so we're subsidizing them. And I think it was originally for oil security. See what I mean? That's what I always thought. I always thought that we were keeping Israel, you know, alive there. Not only because of the prophecy, what's happened is that the prophetic arguments are to our charismatic American Christian
dispensationalist.
That's right. So that's a strong argument that they are making to that Christian group to continue the support of all this money to the state of Israel. See? And I think that's very strong. And those are the people that voted for Trump. Also, see, in fact, Pence is in that area, see, of Christianity. And so I believe he provided the mechanism and the attraction to pull a lot of charismatic Christians, prophetic Christians that support the state of Israel under any circumstances to voting for Trump, see. Now, that doesn't mean that there's some good people in Israel, but they have the same problem that we have. That sometimes we're up against very, very corrupt politicians. And that's really the problem. So the corrupt politicians in Israel are working with our corrupt politicians. That's the problem. See? It's not the states of Israel or the, and so forth, and America that are bad or have bad people. The leadership on both sides that have been corrupting this whole process and then profiting from all this money exchange and so forth. A military-industrial type of operations on both sides. So that's basically what I see going on, and it's all about money. They don't care about religion. They just play that, you know, to the Christian charismatic group. See what I mean?
Well, let's not forget that NATO and American forces are often executing the agenda of, you know, that old world element of,
yes.
You know, call them the Illuminati. Call them what you want them.
Call them. Well, you know, the Gladio operations were directly out of the NATO complex, see. And in Turkey, they played a pivotal part in the rise and fall of many of the leaders over there, see. Now that Turkey thing right now is very interesting because they're coming in and creating an alliance with Russia in formating a peace in Syria. And boy, I tell you what, this New World Order and headed up by Hillary and her gang weren't for any peace accord in Syria. They wanted Assad gone, see. And I think mainly it was because of this pipeline that he resisted going through the northern part of Syria into the Mediterranean. There was a pipeline they wanted to put in there, and he resisted that. And so they went to war with him, you know. And I think now it's going to work. This whole thing is working out for the interest of Turkey. See, Turkey has a vital interest in there now because the Kurds have built a temporary area in there, okay, and of control and influence. So on both sides of the Turkey and Syrian border, you have a very strong Kurdish presence. And boy, the Turks don't want that. That's what's enabling them and motivating them, along with the Russians, to seek a peace there in Syria and get those Kurds back out of there. See what I mean? Because they don't want those Kurds to have any kind of homeland or presence in any part of Turkey. See?
Sure.
And they've been at odds with the Kurds for years. See? And they've been fighting, and then they've had all kinds of terrorist groups that Turkey's been after them for years. So that's one of the motivating factors now is because of the Kurdish presence that has moved in to the area, then they want to strike a peace and move the Kurds back out, see?
Well, and what do you think, not to change the subject too much, but on when we talk about movements of large groups of people, what about the phenomena that's occurring in Europe with all the flood of immigrants going from the past year and a half?
I think the key was looking at Merkel, okay, Chancellor Merkel, and she's a direct, directly controlled by the Bilderberg Group, and I think this is the top level Illuminati Bilderberg Group in Europe is behind the flooding in of those refugees. They want them because they're going to break up the known cultures and so forth. They want an amalgamation of Europe. They don't want known cultural groups anymore in Europe. And I believe that that's what they were trying to do with the influx of refugees and so forth. They want to destroy the nation states of Europe.
Well, what about the religious element? We need to bring a reformation to the Islamic world.
Well, I think this is backfiring on them somewhat in the sense that the jihadists that infiltrated in with many of your immigrants are fervent about jihadism. I mean, you know what I mean? And they want to take and convert. The problem with this is that Islam itself is not compatible with most Western countries. Okay, and it becomes after you reach about 5 to 7% of the population as being Islam, there's a propensity for Islam to take over and start controlling and dominating the countries that it's in with those kind of populations, and it's a kind of religion that either you're part of the religion or if you leave, you're really castigated and they're after you then, see. So it's not a religion that you can walk in and out of that easily, see. And that's what makes it, very, very, dangerous to be associated with, okay? And, also women's rights, forget that. They don't have any. Not in that kind of religion. And so as a result, you have problems in religions. And I'm not saying that the West is lily white either. The West is the Iranians used to call us the white Satanists and all that good stuff, see. But the Western culture too is not without problems and moral problems and things like that.
Well, so, I'm encouraged that we did go through a Christian Reformation of sorts where we did, and Judaism apparently did too, where we abandoned slavery as far as I know it.
Right.
And that was in everybody's text. And it's just that Islam needs to go through a sort of a reformation as well, a look in the mirror, and abandon those parts of their doctrine that need to go.
I don't know if it's possible, Charlotte. It's a very strict religion, see. And the prayers and things like that, and also the requirements for one pilgrimage to Mecca during every Islam's lifetime is a requirement, you know. And they have a Kuba there in the middle there in Mecca inside the mosque there, and they circle that thousands circle around that, and there's the Kuba is a cube like building. And one corner of the Kuba is a black stone, okay? And it's encased behind glass now so that they can't actually touch it. But one of the great deeds or something to accomplish is to touch that stone or where it is there on that corner. I think it's on the northeast corner of the building. As that circles around, they go in counterclockwise around this Kuba, okay? And the tradition is that black stone was a meteorite that was sent to them by God, by Allah. And so it was like a message to the followers of Muhammad. And that's why they finally put that inside the mosque there in Mecca.
Well, check it out, George.
As a result, this is I'm just telling you some of their belief systems, see?
Sure, check it out, though. Check it out. The Queen of England was coronated over 30 years ago, whenever she was, and she, her throne, underneath her throne was a stone.
Right,
The head pillow of Jacob or something like that.
It has to do with
the tribes of Israel. And there's a possibility that there's a Hebrew connection.
That's British Israelism, see, you're talking about.
Well, it's possible. I mean, but you got to say, you know, and I don't know where that stone comes from, but it's, you know, it tells them sacred, the British Empire.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that there, every religion has a story, right? Okay. And so these are the stories that we're relating about these types of religions, whether it's a Christian or Islam. Now, I'm not knocking, the Islam religion. I'm just stating what some of their beliefs are, see. And, so, I mean, there's always, some kind of a tale, see what I mean? Or legend that's always associated with any religion as such. And of course, you know what I believe. I believe that we should minimize, ourselves from being controlled by any of these stories. See what I mean? And we should just, simplify our basic belief system down to just very minimal things. And, I would say the Ten Commandments and forgiveness and love your neighbor, would do more than enough for most people. See? But, and that you don't have to have any stories related to any of that. But anyway,
no grand philosophies and
people become seduced into things. So it's what we call conversion. It's being done by, you know, these self-help groups that sprung up in the 60s. They use that technique that they call conversion, see. And when you convert someone, you convert them to a membership in a new group or whatever. Say the Scientology group or whatever, unification, and they all have stories and they have beliefs about what's going on in the secret knowledge that they have, the secret truth, right? So, I mean, everybody's got this secret truth that they're going to let you in on, right? If you're a member, right?
Huh? Well, we give ours away for free, right?
Yeah, so you can't listen to this show for free. You have to pay us something, right? And then we'll tell you the secret truth, right?
Yeah.
But to come out of the seduction of all of these groups that are practicing these kinds of recruitments and conversions, that's my solution, see, is not to be seduced by any of these things, see what I mean? But to be free from any of these mechanisms that are being used to control us. And I think the way out is forgiveness, and I think that can release you from many of these things.
Well, we still have a tough world to face because, you know, we've had a doubling of the human population in basically your lifetime, more than a doubling.
Yeah.
I think around the time you were born, George, there was something like 2.5 billion people in the world.
Yeah.
And today there's like 7.4, I heard.
Yeah.
You know, those are incredible growth numbers in a matter of decades.
Right.
And we put up all these electrical grids, and we built cities, you know, and there's just so much, you know, that society has to do to continue to keep pace with itself.
Right. Well, you know, one of the problems with what's been going on, too, is when we start shipping food around all over the world, then actually we continue an unnatural growth cycle in areas too that don't have the food that they normally would have. In other words, there's a natural tendency in certain areas to limit population naturally. But when you start shipping food and wheat all over the world like we've been doing, then you're going to upset that natural relationship in certain areas. And I'm not saying that we should let people starve either. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying when you start, you know what I mean, going outside of the natural cycles in the areas there where populations would normally reduce, you know, themselves because of non-food or whatever, then you're going to create some kind of a surge in population growth.
Well, Well, I guess droughts, changes in the environment have always been occurring.
Right, right.
But
right.
we've had, but never before have we built a world where we got 7.4 billion of us.
Right, right.
You know, your observation is very interesting and, you know, it has validity, it's valid. But, you know, I don't know, George, we mechanicalized, we made it mechanized, we've made it robotic. I mean, we pulled it all out of the earth. You know, just what are we going to do? How are we going to keep going with this? That's what I want to know.
The toilet green, maybe.
Huh? I don't know, but yeah, you know, but it's one thing that, you know, it's one thing what you say has validity about, you know, it's natural not to live in the desert per se. I mean, I don't think it's wise to pump water into a desert.
Yeah.
You know, that's me though.
Well, Gaddafi had some water resource finds in Libya that were tremendous underwater resources, and he was getting ready to, develop those and turn much of that desert into an oasis. And I don't think the powers that are wanted that. And then also he was becoming the leader of the African continent. They didn't want that. He was beginning to have some kind of a gold-backed, you know, dinar. They didn't want that.
Right.
So along comes Hillary and promotes this war in Libya, see. And boom, he's gone. And then I think it was dubious the way he was under a flag, a white flag, when they stopped him and killed him. So they had communicated they would accept his surrender from him. But then they double-crossed him, I believe, with what the story is. And that was done under Hillary's State Department. So, you know. And actually, Libya was an interesting place because it was governed. It wasn't just governed by Gaddafi. He had tribes that he reported to. They still had a very strong tribal system over in Libya. And now, they still have the tribes there. They just don't evaporate or go away. So he had to report to an assembly of tribes, see, and it was the tribes and Gaddafi together that actually ruled the country. Okay, so I've forgotten the number of tribes that they had, but it's several hundred. Okay, they were divided into different tribal groups over there, and so as a result, we're not even told that. See what I mean? We're told that he's a dictator and this and that, and he's mistreating people. But they had a greater standard of living under Gaddafi than they have right now. And he was taking much of the oil money and repatriating it to your average citizen over there. And so they had a pretty good standard of living compared. And to now it's just an utter catastrophe in Libya. It's a disaster.
Running water. I mean, how bad is that?
Oh, they're fighting still. There's not any legitimate government over there. And you've got different, radical factions, Al-Qaeda's in there and everything else, and there's arms everywhere. And I was trying to communicate one time with the guy over there, and I had a difficult time because he couldn't always go. He was in Tripoli, but he couldn't always go there. Now, do you know the story about the Marines in Tripoli? Huh?
No, what happened?
Jefferson. There were pirates that were taking over our ships, attacking our ships.
What year? Okay? What year are you talking about?
During Thomas Jefferson's administration.
Okay.
And he sent the Marines in there and cleaned them out. You remember from the halls of Montezuma, which would be in Mexico, to the shores of Tripoli?
Right.
We'll fight with all our might. We're United States Marines.
Sure.
Well,
sure.
That the song, when they talk about Tripoli, they're talking about the Barbary pirates.
Really?
Yes. And we went over there and went to war with the pirates and cleaned them out. And that was done under Jefferson. And that was, so the Marines were sent in there to do it, and they did it, man. United States Marines, you know. And quite a fighting force, and I really respect them, you know.
Yeah.
So I mean, now we've got these two factions, though, that I see. Everything is flip-flopping. We've got we got the liberal Democrats that are talking like the right used to talk, you know, about supporting Putin against Trump. You see what I mean? And they no longer talk about peace anymore. They're actually for the Syrian war, your liberal Democrats. And Hillary is right there. See what I mean?
Wow.
So things are flip-flopping around, and they don't make sense sometimes. See what I mean?
Yeah,
so
I agree.
Mm-hmm. It's just, we're just out, the country's almost out of control. And I don't like some of these appointees, possible appointments that Trump is going to make. But at least he's set out about five things that I hope he can get accomplished. I don't know. But now they're talking like he can't even get the immigration thing done like he wants to. But I believe just recently, Barack has done away with a list of not jihadists, but Islamists from countries that possible terrorist countries. I believe he's just dissed a big list that was put together. That's what they're saying in the report that I've read. So, someone probably has a copy somewhere and they can reiterate it. You know what I mean?
Goodness,
but
I would hope so.
The reports were that the Obama administration destroyed that list or did away with it, deleted it. That would be a list that at least Trump could start with or something, but I think
George,
he's going to create his own list.
Are we talking about Al Qaeda? Because doesn't that mean in Arabic something like the database?
It might be.
Yeah, no, I believe Al Qaeda or Al Qaeda meant the database in Arabic.
Yeah.
We always, but, you know, after 9/11,
the list, as I understand it, was a list of possible terrorist people or affiliated with.
I hope it was a database.
Yeah, yeah. So it was at least something that could be looked at, you know. But when you start making lists, you can put people on lists that are innocent too. Say. So we've got to control the immigration problem, that's for sure. And from some of these young, like 22 to 35 year old men coming in, we don't need those in here, period. I don't know, you know, if they're coming from Islamic countries, we've just got to curb some of the influx into the country, and we've got to vet, and we can't even vet some of these people. They don't, you know, the birth certificates are gone, or they didn't have any, and they can use different names. And I guess they're going to start fingerprinting everybody coming in and trying to track them with fingerprints. See what I mean?
Well,
I don't think that's
DNA
done.
Start a database on
yeah,
them.
Right. But right now, there's a bunch of Somalis coming in that are just wild men, you know. And they're saying that they're Islam and this and that and so forth and trying to come into the country, you know. And I don't blame them for wanting to come in, you know. You know, if they're truly, you know, fleeing some kind of persecution, political or whatever. But I think that he's flooding, Obama's flooding them in right now. And it's just getting in very difficult down on the border of Texas here to even process them through. Thousands are coming in a day.
Wow.
So they're returning some, though, over almost 500,000. Over this last year, which returned. Okay. So, it's not all one way, but, I think children are being sent in, see. And I don't think they're returning that many children, but then they have to put them somewhere. And, some of the recent reports that they were, some of these newly, immigrants were given $10,000 in money, too.
Wow, really?
Yeah. So they're giving them money. They're giving them an envelope with money in it. They're resettling them in areas where people are not wanting them to settle and so forth. And we just don't need them here. And we've just got to curb the influx, period. It's unfortunate that we may not let in some really good people. But then we need to watch the people that are wanting to come in and make application and process them in an orderly way. Otherwise, we're going to get in a bunch of jihadists here, And we already probably have.
Well, here's what bothers me is that, you know, we only have 320 million or 340 million Americans, right?
Yeah, 330, 325, something like that.
We're a pretty big continent here that we, or a portion of a continent that we, you know, inhabit. Well, that the rest of the world, we're such a small percentage, and there's 7.4 billion people out there.
Right.
They don't need to be coming here.
I know.
Or we should be saying to ourselves, eventually they're going to come.
Yeah.
One or the other.
Well, if the people that we allow into the country, we should know who they are as much as possible. And especially right now, Trump started concentrating on saying late in his campaign that he wanted to deport immediately the criminals that were illegal immigrants. And, boy, I'm for that. We just got to get them out of here. We have the criminal. There are immigrants out there, law-abiding, take care of their families, love their families. And that would be the last ones I would ever want to process or deport. But these people that have come in that have committed crimes here, if we don't need them, we got to get them out of here. And I think Trump finally reasoned that out later in his campaign that we've got to deport the criminal elements, period, right now, when he takes over. Now, the problem is that will he be inaugurated soon? And
why would he be?
There are problems out here with Obama saying dangerous things with Russia, you know.
Yeah,
keep bringing up there. And then right now, also, though, Trump is no fool. You can't easily roll Trump, okay? As they say in New York City, go out and roll somebody, you know?
Yeah.
You know, rob them. Well, he's not easily robbed by anybody. So he's no fool. So right now, according to some of the insiders that we talked to, is that he's got his inner circle of security are people that are not Secret Service. Okay? So his closest, you could say, security are people that he knows, that he's known for years. And they're providing the best security closest in to him. And then the Secret Service is outside of that. Okay? So he knows that just like JFK had problems with the Secret Service in Dallas. See? He's not trustworthy of anything that's connected to government. Okay? That's why on some of his security briefings, he's saying, unless it's something that I really need to know, I don't care about being briefed. Because he knows just like this put up job on this Russian, cyber, you know, attack on Hillary's campaign or whatever. There's no forthcoming real evidence that occurred. And recently they've come up with the latest article is that, in Vermont on somebody's computer, we found a bug in there, a malware that was Russian. So that means that the Russians were trying to come into that plant and sabotage that plant. Now, who put that on that computer? How did it get there? They're just saying these real generalizations that can't be proved, see? And then Hillary's people are being all riled up, the liberal Democrats, like, oh my gosh, Putin's in bed with Trump and they were against us during the election, things like that. I don't think they'll get very far with that, but there's still a danger to Trump, right now between now and the inauguration, which is going to take place in about 19, 20 days, 20th of January. And I believe on the 6th of January is when the final votes are counted, the Electoral College votes, in the Congress. They have a meeting and they meet there and the results are already, you know, calculated by the states. But they have to be accepted by the Congress, counted, and then he becomes officially president on January 6th after that count's made, you know, by Congress. Of the Electoral College votes. So we're still five or six days off from that too.
So he'll actually be the president in 5 or 6 days. But
yeah,
we won't have the open ceremony until the 19th.
That's right, until the 20th. January 20th is inauguration. Yeah, that's just the, in fact, I don't think the Constitution states that the president has to be sworn in, even, okay? I think it began to be a tradition, you know, to do that, okay? And actually, the inauguration used to be on March 4th, okay? Not on January 20th. And I think it used to be the inauguration was in commemoration of the final state that ratified the Constitution. I think the final ratification of the Constitution didn't come exactly on March 4th, but they started using March 4th as a date for the final ratification of the Constitution. But anyway, so it became an official date in United States history for the final ratification of the Constitution. We've got about 2 or 3 minutes left, Charlotte. What, you have some final comments here?
Well, I just want to wish everybody well through this new year and wish you a happy new year, George. And just say, you know, keep your head up and help each other.
Charlotte's going to have a birthday soon, right?
Yeah, sure am.
Yeah, and I wish you a happy birthday, Charlotte.
Oh, thank you, George.
I wish I could be up there with you on everything.
Oh, it's too cold and boring.
Hello to Mike and Megan and Rachel and all your family up there. And I know they've done some fine things helping you, and you've helped them a lot, too.
Yeah, thank you, George.
And I want to thank all of our listening audience out there for over 10 years of listening to us. And I've looked back on, we're going to get more and more of our videos up that we've produced, and we're going to put more and more of our radio audio programs up too. And I also found that some of that old stuff, I found your stuff too, Charlotte. We're going to do that, put your stuff up.
Oh, you found my stuff? What do you mean?
Oh, yeah, it's on We the People Radio, the network.
Oh, you found all my past recordings there? Fantastic.
Yeah, we got that, and I'm going to make you a site on that. I have, the one for a World Review commentary up. That I found all that stuff, too.
Oh, that's fantastic, George.
So we're going to put, I know you get a lot more credit for this than people know about, Charlotte. You've really done a lot over the years. I want to thank you so much for everything you've done.
Oh, you too, George. Thank you. I really appreciate it. It's been a very important part of my life.
Yeah, and really, once I started reviewing some of these old programs, we've been actually done some breakthrough stuff, you know. We were way ahead in certain areas. We'd go over there in like Myanmar, you know, we'd be interviewing somebody in Myanmar, you know. It was a police state, military state then, and now it's becoming more moderate than it was when we interviewed people. And of course, they were no longer in the country. They had fled, you know. But anyway, we tried to stand up for freedom and liberty and what's right and what's good.
It's a lot of turmoil in this big old world of ours. We should try to take care of each other.
But anyway, I want to thank again all of our listening audience and their support over the years. And we're going to be continuing to put out some programs. And we're going to have our second hour, a replay of a previous program. So stay tuned for that second hour. And I want to thank very much you, Charlotte, and everybody else in the network here that we have that's been helping us put this out, okay?
Thank you, George.
Okay.
Love you.
Good night, Charlotte. Love you, babe.
Love
good night.
You too. Bye.
Happy birthday. Bye-bye.